Welcome to The Space Show, presented at this time every week by the Space Association of Australia.
Hello, my name is Michael Abdillah and I'll be your Capcom for this evening. While in Mission Control tonight, we have the dynamic duo Mark and Mark working the panel. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, in another packed program tonight, we've got a lot to get through. First of all, we'll review the week that was in space, and then we'll cross live to Florida for the final time to talk with Andrew Rennie, who has been over at the Kennedy Space Center covering the STS-131 Discovery shuttle mission. As you'll hear, he's been a very busy boy, and that particular shuttle mission is not the only thing that he's been doing while at the Kennedy Space Center and in the US generally. We'll be asking Andrew about his close encounters with the US president, an astronaut with strong connections to the moon, and another astronaut with a strong connection to Australia. We might ask him what it was like to watch the landing of STS-131, the Discovery mission, how he felt being inside the vehicle assembly building during the rollout of the STS-132 orbiter Atlantis from the VAB to Pad 39A, and what it was like taking part in the media Q&A with the next crew to go up in a space shuttle. That's the STS-132 crew. There was a media Q&A on the launch pad with that crew, and that's quite an interesting conversation that was had there. So all of that and more, if we can fit it in, from about 7:30 tonight. So stay tuned.
Do we know, just quickly, if remember we heard him at the press conference last week?
We did. We heard him at the press conference last
asking
week.
Asking a question.
A question that they didn't seem to be able to answer.
That's right.
Do you know if we got to add any more questions?
He did.
Oh, he did.
He did get to ask a question. and I'll get to that a bit later on. So he did get to ask a question, and funnily enough, that question was about submarines.
It was about submarines?
Yes.
And what was the context, you know?
Good question. So, submarines, I hear you ask. Submarines and the space program. Well, you'll have to listen to the interview later on.
Okay, good.
To find
Excellent.
Out. Next, we'll go to the Q&A session that I was talking about earlier on. The media question and answer with the crew of the next shuttle flight, which is due to launch on May 14. That's the STS-132 flight of the shuttle Atlantis. You'll note that the astronauts are in a very relaxed and jovial mood as they answer questions, and I think some of their answers and reflections may surprise you. So see what you think about...
Surprise us or worry us?
Well, perhaps a bit of both. Well, I'll let you be the judge of that. And as I said earlier, if you listen closely towards the end of the segment that we'll play tonight, you'll hear our roving reporter Andrew Rennie ask his question, and we'll see what you think about the connection between submarines and the space program. So we'll go along to the Q&A.
Thank you for joining us here at NASA's Kennedy Space Center, Launch Pad 39A. We're here with the six astronauts for the STS-132 mission, Space Shuttle Atlantis' mission to the International Space Station. I'm going to give the microphone immediately over to the commander for the STS-132 mission, Ken Ham, and then he'll talk to the crew and we'll entertain questions. Okay, man.
Thanks, Allard. I'm going to start with an excuse. When we flew in here a couple days ago for this training period for us at the Cape, we knew that most of you guys, the press, were really tired, and that's because you had just filmed STS-131 landing that morning, and we were flying in the afternoon. You guys have been up all day. Now the roles are reversed. You guys have probably been sleeping since then. And we were out here riding the crawler last night, I think we got back to bed maybe 2:33 in the morning, something like that. I'm not sure what time it was. And then we were up at 5:30 this morning. So we're the tired ones, and that's our excuse. It's kind of interesting. There's been a lot of discussion these days about the future of the space program. I'm beating you guys to the punch on all your questions so that you can't ask it. And I think maybe one of the bottom lines or the main thoughts is that there is uncertainty in the future as we try to figure out how to implement the president's vision, which I'm sure we're going to do. But that leads to uncertainty, and uncertainty is always a little bit scary. However, living in the moment, I think for everybody involved in this business, whether you are an engineer in Houston, an engineer in California, a wrench turner up there on the pad, a press person that's here to cover this kind of event, everybody wanted to be in the space business. And guys, this is what's going on right now. We're launching shuttles, we're landing shuttles, we are shooting the X-37 vehicle, hopefully this evening. I believe there is a Progress undocking sometime today from Space Station, which is going to free up a port for us to bring up another module to put on that port. So there's an incredible amount of activity going on right now in the space world, and we should all be enjoying it. I can tell you for sure, the six of us are.
Andrew Rennie from Southern FM in Australia. A question for Steve Bowen. How does being aboard the space station compare with being aboard a submarine?
It's interesting because for years people had told me, oh, it's nothing like it, but I figured I might be the first person to really know. And the first thing that struck me when I crossed the hatch was the odor was very similar to a submarine. That lived in recycled atmosphere, I think it's just a natural thing. The space station's just incredible, and it's actually got a little more living space per person than a submarine does, but its mission is obviously very different. And I think living up there would be very similar. You could ask Garrett what it was like to actually live there for an extended period of time, and someday I hope to be able to do that myself.
Hello, Andrew. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic. Now, I've been telling the listeners that you've been a very busy boy while you've been over in the US, and there's lots of things that we can talk about. Just wondering where you'd like to begin.
Oh gosh. Well, there's been so many things as you've just said. Of course, we were going to talk last week about Obama.
That's right. Yeah.
And his visit. But the reason I didn't call, we didn't make contact last week, was that I was at the Kennedy Space Center, right beside the vehicle assembly building, in, I might add, pouring rain. Waiting for the rollout of the Atlantis to the pad for the mission that they call STS-132. But as you might gather, they don't roll it in the rain. So some guys realized that and sort of disappeared. But a few of us hung around. And we made arrangements that we would meet at 10 p.m. that very evening, and we did. Now, there's a little bit of part of the story which is a little difficult to tell, especially on air, but anyway, at 10 o'clock that evening, me and a few others were in the car park, and we got on a little NASA minivan. And we drove around. Now, I thought we were going to go beside the crawl away and watch the vehicle come past. But
right.
No, we drive in through the gate there's a fence that surrounds the vehicle assembly building. And we drove in through that fence and up to the little door on the side. Now, this is it used to be the world's largest building by volume, not in height, but by volume. And, you know, it's about 50, 60 stories high as it is. And it's got a little door in the side. And we went in through that door. And we had to go into a thing. And like miners, we had to hand over our identity, the card that NASA gave us, and change it for another number. Just like miners going down a mine, so they knew who was in the building. And we went to the lift, and I thought, oh God, we're in the VIP, man. and we went up this lift and went up extraordinarily fast. Ooh, and it stopped about halfway up the shuttle, and I could see through the side. It's got glass window on the side of the thing. There was the shuttle going up past us.
Fantastic. Were you able
and
to take photographs?
About halfway out, and at that point, I could see all the real pro media types, and there was only about nine of us, rush out of the lift. But the guy that had the NASA, the NASA photographer, he stayed in the lift, and I thought, okay, so I stayed in the lift with him, along with two other people, so there's three of us. And the lift started again, and we were even higher. And we ended up at the top of the stack. And we went out, and we'd had to tape our glasses and things so they wouldn't fall off. But beyond that, it was an incredible trust. And there, right, was the nose of the Atlantis.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
And we could go all on both sides of it. And to see the bottom of it, I had to lean out. There was no fences, nothing. Just a waist-high wire mesh. A bit stronger than wire mesh, but, that sort of thing. And there was the Atlantis. And I could almost reach out and touch her. Now, wow. I know she was quite a few hand lengths away, but it felt like you could touch her. And certainly, had I dropped anything like a camera lens or anything over the edge, it would have hit the Atlantis. We were above the Atlantis, and the solid rocket boosters, which are fully fueled, were there. Oh, we had to surrender our mobile phones so that in case the mobile signal from it triggered an explosion. So there we were at the, looking right directly at the windows of the Atlantis and the external tank and so on, inside this huge building. And we had quite a while to photograph it and so on. And then, as luck would have it, I could change positions, went down the lift to the midpoint and was able to photograph it from there. So I got two for the price of one, whereas the professional photographers only got the one. They only got it from the middle. But I sort of took my hunch and went to the top. And then I thought they were going to shoo us out of the building. And I was standing there looking at it, just sort of, there's only so many photos you can take. And I took three or four times that many. And then I was standing there, and I thought, that thing's moved. And I looked down, way, way down below, and I could see the tracks of the Kola transporter moving. And they were moving it out of the VOB while we were still in the building. Now, I thought, I didn't believe we'd ever get inside the VOB, and secondly, that they'd shoo us out before it started moving. But no, we were in the building right as it crawled right out. And then, when it got outside the VOB, and that took about 10, 15 minutes, they turned on the brilliant xenon lights to light up the vehicle. So I managed to get these photographs from inside the VOB, looking out at this brilliantly lit up orange, white, and black stack on this grey crawler transporter moving slowly off into the distance.
Very nice.
Then we went down the lift, took some more photos from the ground level out. Ground level now at the stack as it was still moving away from the VOB. Then we got in the van and we drove quickly round to the side and was able to take some photographs across the lagoon with reflection shots, and mm-hmm. flag shots of the vehicle and the flag and things like that. And it moved along on a brilliantly clear night. It was absolutely fantastic night. So that was my big surprise, being able to be in the VAB when they rolled Atlantis out to the pad.
That's excellent. How long were you able to stay with Atlantis as it rolled out to the pad?
Well, the rollout takes about Well, they were supposed to start rolling at midnight, and I think they started rolling early at about 1:45. So at about just after 11:30 p.m. They turned out the lights about 2 hours afterwards because it had moved out of photo range and they had these brilliant xenon lights on it, and I could still see the vehicle in the distance, but they turned the lights out. At that point, we left. I mean, there was no point staying around anymore. And the rollout takes another, I'm not sure exactly, but by dawn anyway, it was on the pad. And speaking of that, the astronaut who's going to fly the next mission, he drove the vehicle out of the VAB. That's Ken Ham, the commander. Uh-huh. He's a United States Navy captain, and he's been up once before as a pilot on STS-124. Well, he was driving the Kola transporter, and normally the astronauts don't do this, but they're doing all sorts of things unusually here at the Kennedy Space Center because these are the last,
five
missions, counting the one that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Ham drove it out. And I was making jokes about he'll be driving a lot faster when he drives this thing off the launch pad. But later in the thing, I think have you just played the comments the astronauts made?
We did. We played.
And
the
he made reference there to driving the a bit like driving a ship, a battleship.
That's right. Yep.
It's the same battleship grey. It's big and weighs about the same as a battleship, but it sure as hell goes a lot slower than a battleship and a lot slower than a shuttle. So I'd been making jokes about how he's going to be driving a lot faster when he got his hands on the in the cockpit rather than in the cabin of the Kola transporter.
And what's this about you getting the opportunity to drive around the shuttle Atlantis as it sat on the launch pad? Was that...
Yes, well, as I said, it arrived there about dawn. So having been up till 2 a.m. in the morning, I drove back to Titusville, had about maybe 2 hours sleep, got up about 4 in the morning to be in the NASA car park about 5 in the morning, and then in the dawn, we drove out to the launch pad. At this point, Atlantis was now sitting on its own, on the mobile, was sitting on its mobile launch pad, and the Kola transporter was just coming out from underneath the shuttle and was coming down the Kola way. So I was able to take some photographs of that event. And then what happened was we, having been given about half an hour to take our photos and things, in the early morning sunshine, we got on the bus, and suddenly, we hadn't been told that this was going to happen, there's a road that goes right around the launch pad, very close to it. If you look at aerial shots of it, you'll see that road. And we started driving around it. And I thought, my God. And so we all opened the windows of the bus, which you're not normally supposed to do, and to get clear shots, and we drove slowly, but we didn't ever stop, slowly around 360 degrees around it, and boy were the cameras going like fury, you know, everyone was taking video and photographs and so on. These are professional media people, and we drove full 360 degrees around it. We saw the hydrogen tanks that they store the liquid hydrogen in.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the oxygen tanks they set in. We saw the emergency escape vehicles, the little tanks that they have. We saw the slide wires. We saw the trench, the bunker that they hide in. And we saw some nice photogenic shots across some little pools of water they have there. We saw the flame trenches and the shuttle. They had not yet put the rotating service structure around the shuttle. See, there's normally a part of the launch pad's rotating service structure covers the shuttle until just a few hours before launch. But they hadn't yet put that around. So there was Atlantis on the external orange external tank and the white external boosters sitting there naked, as it were, exposed to the elements in a way that it's not normally done when it's sitting on the pad. Like I'm looking out now at the vehicle from my motel room here in Titusville,
mm-hmm.
and across there I can see the Atlantis and its stack all lit up, but you can't actually see Atlantis because it's you see the external tank and the solid rocket boosters, but the shuttle itself, even when you're quite close to it, you can't see much of, because it's hidden by this rotating service structure, which is used to change out the payload and things and put the last few minute things aboard the shuttle before they launch it. So they hadn't yet put that around, so we drove around there.
Excellent.
And then we went back to the media center, waited a little while, and then we went back and drove back out there again. And this time the crew, they were setting up, and the crew interview happened. That's the part you've just played.
That's right.
And that was happened standing right there beside the Atlantis space shuttle on the stack. They still hadn't put the rotating service structure around it. And we were standing there, and we did the media session, in which they made a few statements, as you've just heard on air, and then we got the chance to ask some questions.
Mm.
And the background to the question that I asked there was that I picked up from the crew statements that one of them had been a submarine officer, that's Steve Bowen. He's a mission specialist, he's a captain in the United States Navy, and he's been up once before on STS-126. And he's 46 years old, married with three children, and he's the first submarine officer ever to be selected as an astronaut.
Well, there you go.
So I picked up on that point, and asked that was why I asked that particular question. There's only time to ask really basically one question per reporter.
And I noticed that the astronauts were in a very sort of relaxed and jovial mood. They were sort of kidding about a bit and that kind of thing.
Yes, and I was there at the airfield shuttle landing facility when the astronauts arrived several days ago. And they were jumping around and bouncing around and having a real good time. And I've got a recording of that, which we'll play on a space show in the near future.
Okay.
So, yeah, they are very happy. And the next day, last Saturday morning, again, another early morning out there at dawn, before dawn even. And then what happened was we went to the... And by now, the number of people down, because most people's media badges had run out by this time. Mine was valid until Sunday. So if I want to go in there now, I can't.
Right.
My badge has run out.
Right.
But I could go in on Saturday and see the astronauts come out. They have a practice that they call the terminal countdown demonstration test, in which they run through all the procedures they'll go through on the morning of the or evening of the launch. And so they did that march out, the famous one you see on TV where the astronauts come out in their spacesuits, give a wave, and then get into the van and drive away.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I saw that, again, from only about 3 meters away from it, and they did that rehearsal on Saturday morning. So again, I saw the astronauts there, and again they were happy and bouncing around, and you know, they're a really, really ebullient crew.
They certainly came across as such in the Q&A. And what's your photograph count, do you know?
Well, I went away with two chips of 2 gigabytes each. And I'm shooting at quarter resolution because that's more than even a high-definition television set will show up as a good photo. And, well, I know on the chip I got at the moment I got over 1,300 photographs, and now the chip that I've filled up, I must have lots more. But that's digital. In the old days I used to shoot slides, and one shows one shot carefully. And, you know, after a trip of a month, you came back with 7 or 8 rolls of slide film, you counted yourself done.
That's right.
But with digital, you can shoot, shoot, shoot. Some of these shots are on sequences as well, like the astronaut walkout. You press the shutter and the camera just keeps on click, 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 taking 3.5 pictures a second. So you get sort of a movie of them walking along.
Very nice.
Yep. Now, Obama.
Yes, so what was it like?
We were going to talk about him last week.
We were. And we played some of his speech and also some of the reaction from some of the astronauts and some of the NASA administrators and so forth. But you've led a very charmed life in the last few weeks. And so what was it like to have a sort of close encounter with the president and also, I understand, with a few quite famous astronauts?
Yes. Okay. Firstly, how this came about was Obama cut down the American space program. Although he's increased NASA's budget, he's cancelled the Back to the Moon and all that sort of thing. People here are very, very, and Stephen Moore varies, unhappy about this. I mean, it's their jobs.
That's right.
It's the health of the coal community. And to sort of soothe ruffled feathers, Obama decided to come down here and speak and try to explain his vision a bit more. He was not successful in that, I might add, amongst the people down here.
Okay.
So that was the background.
Yeah.
So he came down, made that speech, basically not offering anything real, and then got on the plane and flew back to Washington. That's the background to it. Invited to the thing were a number of dignitaries, and a number of speeches were made, including Obama's. The only speech that anyone listened to was Obama, and then while the other speeches were going on, the media were packing up their TV cameras and stuff like that.
Right.
They didn't care about all the other people that were speaking, even though they were quite notable people,
yes,
including Norm Augustine, who was on the Augustine Commission that decided some of these changes,
right,
that have been made.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't given... No one listened to him. So, we could apply as media, we could apply to do one of two things. We could go to the airfield and watch the plane land, Air Force One, watch the president get out and get in the car and go away, and then several hours later, watch him come back, get on the plane and fly out. And the throw distance, as they call it here, was 60 meters. That I took that to mean that you wouldn't get within 60 meters of the president.
Okay.
So to see president, but there was no limit on how many people would go to that. To me, that didn't seem like a good option because, although I was pretty certain to be able to be in on that, to see the president 60 meters away, sort of didn't really appeal, and only for a few seconds. So I went for broke. You could only apply for one of two things. So that one, or you could apply to be where the president spoke. But the accommodation there was quite limited. But I thought, damn it, they're not going to let me in anyway, and I'm Australian. They're not letting an Australian into this, so I might as well apply for the real goodie. And I did.
Fantastic.
And blow me down. 2 days later, I got a reply back. You've got to do all these things on email, saying approved. I couldn't believe it. So I was approved to go in. So we went in, and there's a heck of a long story in what happened next, but the result was of being shooed from one posse to another by both White House minders and everything like that. I finally got a position where, in fact, I was closer to the president than I would have been had I been in the prime spot. And I also could see the VIPs and photograph them and so on. I did a radio recording of the whole thing. And so I ended up being about 5 to 6 meters away from the president while he made his speech. And then he came around and did a handshake thing, and I was about 2 meters away from him during that. And I got some nice shots of him shaking Buzz Aldrin's hand. Now, before the president arrived, there was a chance to do some interviews and stuff. Now, looking at the time, saying, okay, nearly 7 o'clock. I got to interview Buzz Aldrin. And me and another guy were standing there, and we said, hey, that's Buzz Aldrin. We rushed up, and we asked him, what's he think of the current situation and how do we get there? And he raved on about it for ages. Well, other people saw us doing this interview, and they rushed in, and they were pushing and shoving and trying to get me aside, and I was standing eye to eye to Buzz Aldrin, and he maintained eye contact with me, and I kept my recorder going, and so on, and I wasn't going to be shoved away. So there. Later on, I met him again at the after session later in the evening, and I went up to him and I said, did he have any thoughts on what would happen, how Australia could get involved? And he looked at me and he's really brass stuff, you know, look, really brass stuff, and I thought he was going to walk away from me. And then he started talking to me. And he gave me another interview about how he thought Australia and the empire, as he called it, could get involved.
Well,
very patronising.
Thanks, Andrew.
Andrew, we're going to have to wind up here because we're very close to time. Thank you very much for your reports over the last few weeks. And this is your last report. And I believe you'll be on the Space Show next week. So look forward
provided
to...
Provided the airline does its job. And
that's right. And there's no volcano eruptions and that kind of thing. Look forward to hearing all of your stories. And some of us will be lucky enough to see the photographs. But with that, we'll need to wrap the show for this evening. So thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
You're tuned to Melbourne Radio's Southern FM, where you hear nothing but great music. 88.3 Southern FM.